Not only is it Cowboys week, it is playoffs for the 49ers, but it's poaching season as well. 49ers assistants being interviewed for head coach jobs, for GM jobs around the league. And we've got some audio from Kyle Shanahan's conference call talking about those Dallas Cowboys, all that coming up and more on this Wednesday episode of Locked On 49ers.
You are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers Wednesday edition. You know what that means, another Winky Wednesday. Today's guest, Nick Winkler, will be joining us momentarily. Brian Peacock and Eric Crocker at DD Peacock at Eric underscore Crocker. Let's get into this and let's bring on today's guest.
Nicholas Winkler, come on down.
Wow. Wink, what's happening, my man? How you feeling? You got a little extra hop in your step after that scintillating finale to the 2021 regular season. Those 49ers made it. They're in the playoffs.
I mean, it's just so wild, right? Because it felt over. It was like, oh, God, when you gave the ball back. And it's like, are we ever going to see the ball again? Like, I think it's done. My wife's like, is everything okay? I was like, no, everything is not okay.
It's not
sitting around the house.
So how about this? According to Next Gen Stats, the 49ers had the lowest minimum win probability of any team to eventually win a game in the Next Gen Stats era, including the famous Miami Miracle in Super Bowl 51, which was 28-3. Like, this was that epic of a comeback win for the 49ers. And the low point wasn't even 17-0. It was actually later in the game. It was the 49ers had a 0.4% chance to win. It was at the moment that
probably the sack for 4th and 18.
Yep. That sounds right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I just went like this when that happened. Just like sat there for a couple minutes.
So really there was like two comebacks. Yeah. So after punting with 1:57 left remaining in the game, that was so basically in order for the 49ers to come back and win, they had to force a 3-and-out, score a touchdown without any timeouts, prevent the Rams from scoring in regulation, and then go win in overtime.
And let's not forget to real quick, something you guys,
it was harder for them to win from that point than it even was for them to come back in the second quarter from 17-0, because at least they had time to do that.
They had
little time to screw around once it got to that point.
You know, it's crazy because, like, you guys mentioned it, you know, on the Rapid React, how clutch Kyle Juszczyk was in that game. Because, yeah, they scored that touchdown, but they still needed to kick an extra point, and he needed to hold that ball. Like, that's not his job. He does it. Yeah, he's the backup, but I was like, it's not tied yet. Like, this is a big, big kick, and then he had to do it again in overtime too. So I'm gonna give Juice even more love.
Were you guys surprised that McVay decided to just run the ball three straight times and make the 49ers use the timeouts as opposed to be a little bit more aggressive and throw the ball, which they, you know, at obviously the second half they didn't have as much success throwing. But I was just so shocked that he just gave up, because the run game was not working at all.
Okay.
The run game was getting stuffed for the majority of the game. They had like two runs that were worth a damn. So,
and you got Cooper Kupp, who's setting records.
Right. And with the 49ers, when they had all three timeouts, to me, I feel like your whole playbook is open. Now, if the 49ers had two timeouts, you have three downs and you want to run some of the clock. Like, I get it. But all three timeouts, you have three plays and you just give up like that. I thought that was odd. Especially for a coach who seems to be a little bit more on the aggressive side.
Yeah, I thought it was surprising with that. And I thought it was surprising in the opposite way when Kyle Shanahan started throwing the ball again after they went 10 straight runs. And then the next drive,
and then he went empty backfield.
They went empty backfield. Kyle went empty backfield. Not even the threat of a run on that second 14 play. That one shocked me. That was probably his worst play call of the game. And it ended up in an interception, too. It took a fantastic play by Jalen Ramsey for that to happen, but still there was some shocking stuff that happened in that game. I don't know if you saw this, Wink, but one of our listeners sent us, and I don't have it saved, I wish I did, but shout out to whoever it was, sent us the screen capture from their Fitbit or their Apple Watch or whatever it was that showed their heart rate during the game. It was like it was in like red territory at that point.
I
don't even want to know where I was at.
You could see it going up and down, but at that point, and you could tell where it was in the game. I mean, it's like red. I'm like, wow, yeah. I never thought to do that.
It made the win so much sweeter, you know, that it felt like it was over.
It did. Yeah, it absolutely did. How about this, though? There's a lot of folks that get interviewed, and Adam Peters has been interviewed before, but there's potential. And the 49ers are a playoff team. When you're a pretty good team, when you have a good offense, when you have something special about your team. And I think I think there's multiple things on the 49ers that you can look at. You could say, I want to get a piece of that front office. I want to get a piece of that offense. I want to get a piece of that defense. And I think we might see all of those. I haven't seen yet any official teams requesting to interview D'Amico Ryans. I think that is absolutely going to happen, whether it's this offseason or maybe, you know, he's a year or two from that. And I think Kyle Shanahan was right on when he said, and he reiterated today in his conference call, that, yeah, the D'Amico Ryans is going to be head coach. And I have no reason to doubt that. And I think he'll knock interviews out of the park, too. So that's why you kind of hope as a 49ers fan that he's not getting those interviews right now. But I'm a little bit surprised that the 49ers offensive coordinator, Mike McDaniel, he's a smart guy, but he's not head coach material to me. Like, is that, like, not necessarily him as a human being, but I think just right now you hear him talk with the media and he's a smart guy, but he's only had 1 year. He's kind of been, you know, he's been a run game coordinator, and I know the 49ers have a great running game, but you're going to make him a head coach. That one was a little surprising. I thought we'd hear D'Amico Ryan's name way before we heard, before we heard Mike McDaniel's name, but obviously, you know, there's been other offensive coordinators from the Kyle Shanahan tree to get other jobs. But that one was a little bit surprising to me. Croc, that surprised you a little bit?
It's the coaching tree, you know, just coming from that offense, and people love it. And you look at some of the success that these guys are having around the league right now, whether it's LaFleur, Zach Taylor over in Cincinnati and the job he's done there. You know, there's all those kind of Shanahan, McVay minions running around right now, and they're getting jobs, and they're doing well. I think the one that kind of failed the most was who went to the Broncos to be an offensive coordinator? I mean, he wasn't a head coach, but he went to be an OC. And Broncos? I thought that was
this year.
Somebody
this
went, was not like last ago. Year. Yeah. Was it Scaring Gorillo? Did he, was yeah, he ever?
That's right. So Scangarello went from quarterbacks coach with the 49ers to offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and it did not work.
It was like one and one. And then came back to the Niners.
Yeah, but aside from me, I mean, it feels like everybody else has had some level of success. Obviously, you have McDaniels, I believe, over there in New York right now. And I mean, you know, we all know what that situation is. But
in New England, you mean Josh McDaniels?
No, Mike McDaniel.
Oh, you mean LaFleur?
Who's over?
Who did Sala take with him?
Sala took LaFleur. He took.
Oh, I thought the other Mike.
Mike McDaniel's still with the Niners. Mike LaFleur, the other Mike of the two Mikes pairing. He went to New York, and then his brother Matt is in Green Bay.
I'm confused with all these guys.
Yeah, it confuses me too. And I always, every time I say either one of the Mikes or Matt LaFleur, I stop and pause and think, okay, is it Mike or is it Matt? Like, which one am I talking about right now? It's Matt in Green Bay. It's Mike LaFleur in New York. Mike McDaniel in San Francisco.
I think those guys are going to continue to get opportunities just because of where they're coming from. I mean, I don't want to say continue, but they will get an opportunity at some point because of the tree that they're coming from.
Yeah. Right. No, I don't doubt that at all. Wink, I know you're stinking on something. We don't have time right this second to get into that, but Wink is stinking on something from Sunday, I think. So we're going to check in on Wink, even though the 49ers won. And there is some front office interviews, some more potential poaches that I think are maybe even more likely than the coaching poaches in this cycle potentially to leave the San Francisco 49ers. More on that next. Some audio from Kyle Shanahan talking about Debo Samuel and those Dallas Cowboys. But how about Built Bar? It's the new year. You're trying to have those New Year's resolutions. We're, you know, in week two of the new year, and maybe those resolutions starting to get a little bit more difficult. But you know what makes it a lot easier is Built Bars, because they are covered in 100% chocolate. They are delicious. They are a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. You want to eat healthy, but sometimes it gets boring. But by, you know, week two, week three, it's just not worth it. But it is with Built Bar, and you won't feel like you're missing anything at all. It's so much easier to stick to your resolution because it tastes you'll want to eat it, unlike other protein bars that can be chalky or waxy or in some cases taste like a chemical spill. You know what I'm talking about if you tried a lot of different kinds of protein bars. Most Built bars contain only 130 calories, only 3 grams of sugar, only 4 grams of net carbs, and 17 grams of protein to power you through your day. Compare that to a candy bar that you might be reaching for that's 240 calories and 30 grams of sugar. That will absolutely wreck your diet. So go to built.com, use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your order. That is promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Tell me if I'm wrong, guys, but I feel like now that his name has been out there for a couple of cycles, that he's interviewed more. As I feel like the first interview is never the job you get unless you're just a superstar, right? You're a superstar up-and-comer. 49ers assistant GM, and he already got a bump in salary, a bump in title recently. He's now assistant GM to John Lynch. Adam Peters is going to be interviewing with the New York Giants in their GM search, according to Peter Schrager of NFL Network. And another member of the 49ers front office also interviewed by the same team, which is interesting. So the Giants have a keen eye on the San Francisco 49ers organization right now. Director of player personnel right under Adam Peters, Rand Carthen, is another person that is up for that Giants GM job. What do you think? Adam Peters, Rand Carthen, Mike McDaniel, D'Amico Ryans, any, all? Do you think they're leaving? Which one would hurt the most, Wink, if they did leave in this cycle?
I think Peters does a lot more than we really know about up there, you know, as assistant general manager. I think that one would probably hurt the most. You know, I think that he has a lot to do with player personnel, which, you know, hasn't been perfect, obviously, but nothing is. And, you know, if you're a team like the Giants and you're dumpster fire, you know, since benching Eli Manning, like, you're going to go after a team that hasn't been a dumpster fire and has actually been very successful. So it makes a whole lot of sense. You don't want to lose any of those guys, but I think he'd hurt the most.
Croc, what do you think? You worried about the coaching staff more or the front office?
I think all coaching staff, because when I look at the 49ers, I feel like they have like a superior coaching staff to a lot of the teams around the NFL in the sense of X's and O's and executing. You know, Kyle Shanahan gets a lot of credit, but what D'Amico Ryans has been able to do with all the turnover in, I mean, just the injuries to secondaries, figuring out different ways to kind of cover guys up to the point where I believe the 49ers have the number 3 defense in the NFL. Like, how is that even possible? So you don't want to lose guys like that. I think that's the one guy. I don't think that should plug and play to have a guy be able to get the response that he has from his defense the way he has. Don't want him going. Anybody else, I mean, Adam Peters and, you know, whatever. But I think Rand Carthen, I did hear or see someone on social media vouch for him and say whoever lands him, they are landing a high-level guy. So, and I'm like, who is he? 49ers have who? What? So I didn't even know who he was, but maybe he's somebody the 49ers don't want to lose. Or if they do lose Peters, he's someone that can kind of step up and take on a little bit more responsibility. But D'Amico Ryans, please don't go.
Rand Carthen played for the New York Giants too. Maybe that's the extra bit of connection, didn't he? Or was that the other Carthen?
No, he played for some teams. I looked it up. He played about 4 or 5 years in the NFL before.
That make a lot of sense.
I'm looking it up now. So Colts, he played. Looks like he only played for the Colts, 2005 and 2006. So younger guy.
There was another team in preseason or like or a practice squad or something, right?
I think it was maybe, was it his brother, Maurice Carthen? Oh, no. Oh, there's his dad. Oh, my God. So that does make me feel.
Wow.
Maurice Carthen is Rand Carthen's dad, and I think he played. I think he's like fullback for the New York Giants. Let me double check on that one. I don't know. It's being slow to load. Yeah, there we go. New York Giants running back, fullback, Maurice Carthen from 1985 to 1992. Wow.
Okay. And you remember that.
His brother, it was his dad. Wow.
And you remember that. Maurice,
I don't know. I don't know why. Tecmo Bowl, dude.
Yeah, that's Tecmo the one. Bowl
is that. That's exactly why it has to be. Very interesting. So it's really hard with the front office to know exactly what they're doing, like who liked which guys, you know? So like you go interview them, right? It's like, okay, who was all about Kittle and who was all about whoever else, you know, CJ Beathard or Jalen Hurd, you know, like whatever you think was a bad draft pick, whatever you think was a good draft pick, like whoever
good guys were.
That's the interview I wish I was in the room for, because those are the answers I want too. You know, I would love to hear about all that stuff. And they might not be able to say everything, because if you don't get hired, you don't want people to know what your draft board looked like necessarily. But I'd be asking all about the draft this year. What was the thought process moving up, drafting a quarterback? You know, what would be your plan with the New York Giants? All those things. That would be super fascinating to me. But it's really hard to know what roles all these guys have, if it would be a huge loss, you know, is it because John Lynch has been around for a while and John Lynch is on top. And it's the same with Kyle Shanahan. It's like, is the Kyle Shanahan offense going to suck because he loses his former run game coordinator, his offense coordinator? I feel like Mike McDaniel is the least of the worries. Out of all of them, I think right now, D'Amico Ryans would be the one that I would want to lose the least out of everybody that might be getting interviews and potentially being hired in the next couple cycles. Even more than Adam Peters. And I probably would have not said Adam Peters. I probably would have said Adam Peters last year at this time. It's just really hard to know. And at this point, John Lynch has done the job enough now that he's trained on the job and he's in charge anyway. So I don't know how much. And it's probably why you would, if you're Adam Peters or you're Rand Carthen, why you would take the job. Because, like, look, I don't get final say. If you're going to give me final say and a bump in pay, bring it on. Let's go. But, I mean, that would be
especially if he's making all those decisions, right?
Do we put too much on like GMs and how good or bad they are when we have Brian Peacock with a shallow draft that's just as good as an NFL? You know, his shallow draft is good as anyone. I mean, if Peacock can do it from his music room, how important is it as a GM? And I'm not saying that there's not GMs that might be better or whatever, but I really think the biggest thing is finding the quarterback. If you find the quarterback, then everybody's good.
Yeah, everybody plays up, right? Coach, quarterback, you have that marriage. You can lose all the assistants. You can lose your star defensive lineman. You can lose people from your front office. You can lose assistants. It doesn't matter if you've got that and you can, like, replenish. And you've got to be able to draft okay. I mean, I will say it for 20 years, it was awesome. But then there was multiple bad drafts in a row by the Patriots, and the thing did start to crumble a little bit. So it's not nothing, but it is – it's not as stark as the difference in, you know, like the best GM in the league and the worst GM in the league. It's not as stark as the difference between the best quarterback in the league and the worst quarterback in the league, because one you can't win with the other. It's like, you got 54% of your picks right instead of 49% of your picks right. Like, it seems like they miss on half their picks, no matter who's making the picks. Eventually, you know, in the long term, it's crazy how hard it is to consistently pick good players in the NFL.
And that's why I like that you do the shadow draft, because that puts into perspective with, like, hey, like I do this. I watch, you know, I don't even know if you have all the access to all 22. So a lot of it is your YouTube scouting and still finding the prospects that you feel would be best suited for the 49ers. You're not able to go and talk to these people in person. You're not able to talk to their coaches, but somehow you still pick the right guy. So I don't want to diminish their role and their abilities to build teams, but if Peacock can do it from his house, then I don't want to lose D'Amico Ryans, who's coaching. I think he makes a bigger difference than Adam Peters or anybody else you could lose.
I mean, on that note, a year ago, if we were asked the same question, we'd be saying, Robert Saleh, we can't lose Robert Saleh. Look what he did with this defense. Robert Saleh. And here we are a year removed, and it's D'Amico Ryans. So is that just a plug-and-play thing?
I think the 49ers, looking back, were lucky that they had D'Amico Ryans ready to go, and that's why they didn't panic and they didn't really even worry about bringing in outside people, because they knew they had this star player. Kyle Shanahan today said that he knew that D'Amico Ryans was going to be a head coach when he was a player, when Kyle Shanahan was an assistant and D'Amico was still a player. And so that's how, like, impressive of a guy he was. And that's why he hired him right away. And to, like, quality control or whatever, then, you know, end up linebackers and then now defensive coordinator. And
I wasn't worried about losing Saleh. I don't know why, but I wasn't.
What a leader he
like,
was.
I feel like we weren't going to be in as dire need of like this, like as if we went now. Like, I feel like if you lose D'Amico Ryans, you're starting all the way over. But when the Robert Saleh conversation started popping up, everybody was like, D'Amico Ryans, or Chris Eric. Like, there were just these names that I was comfortable with, not knowing how well they were going to do. But I was high on the possibility of D'Amico Ryans doing well, because of his background. The linebackers, I understand they're the kind of the quarterbacks of the team. I mean, you have the safeties, but the linebackers, they have to know the front end, they have to know the back end.
Yeah.
there's something to actually doing it and being in it. There's something to understanding the dynamics of a locker room and being a part of it for so many years, being team captains. He was all of those things. And then he had been in every single meeting. He's been with the 49ers the whole time that this entire staff had got there. So him being a part of all of that, a part of every meeting, being a linebacker as well as Robert Saleh and his background coaching linebackers, I just thought it was something that was just going to work out. And I mean, obviously not to this extent being a top five defense, but just in the sense of, hey, I think it's going to do well. And right away, I saw that his schemes and his game plans, I thought they were good the entire time. Outside of two games, one, the Cardinals game, I felt like he had no clue on what to do with Colt McCoy. And then the other time, it was Justin Fields, where I think he maybe miscalculated how well his pass rush was going to do against Fields. But outside of that, I thought as far as what he was thinking, I could see what a coach is thinking by watching the game plan. I thought he's been pretty good.
No, agree.
Two things. One, I knew how good of a coach DeMeco Ryans was, and I wasn't super worried because he had that like 99 Madden awareness back in the day. So I was like, okay, Niners going to be good there. And two, the reason that it's so hard to find a good GM is because they're looking at all the wrong places. They need to go to more basements, right? And they need to go to more podcasts and figure out where the real smart folks are, where the real genius is, and go hire from there.
We can do it, Peacock. Peacock, we can do it.
The reason, dude, me and you, Croc, like, honestly, there's a few other folks on, you know, draft Twitter, writers, podcasters, whatever. No doubt in my mind we could put together a scouting staff, a staff that would wreck certain teams in the NFL. I'm not saying we're going to go, you know, we would go build a dynasty or whatever, but there's bad front offices.
We could go toe-to-toe. We could go toe-to-toe with any. Absolutely. You could put together a staff that could go toe-to-toe, literally, with any staff in the NFL. And I strongly believe that. Now, some of it is about relationships, but clearly, Peacock doesn't even need relationships. He has a shadow draft, and it's just as good as the teams. I mean, come on.
And when I see the shadow draft, I see a draft that's better than the 49ers for the last 10 years. So I think I got to retire it. It's been 10 years. I don't know if I want to do it anymore. I
feel like I was right on top.
That was 10 years, a decade. Yeah. I beat the Niners. Let's go.
You're Barry Sanders.
Yeah, exactly. A Barry Sanders-like career. Is there an over-analysis? Do they have too much information? Because when I look at the shadow draft, I'm like, God, I missed on all these players. But I was really good on the players I had the most information about in the earlier rounds. I was less good in the later rounds, where the 49ers have been good in the later rounds, worse in the earlier rounds. Is there something about like an over-analysis that happens with teams and like an analysis paralysis where they get too much information? Because something's definitely going on. These teams shouldn't be missing as often as they do on first-round draft picks.
Good question.
Great point.
I don't know if there's an answer to that. I have no idea. But we'll see. We'll see if any of those 49ers are
real quick
fired away. Go ahead.
So my big cousin, you know, we all play Madden. You know, we built our teams. He loves like the figuring that part out, right? He's a former player. He was with the Chargers with like LaDainian Thomas and the Spoils and those guys. He was a running back, but blew his knee out a few years in. Anyways, when I got my shot in the Arena League, it was him that reached out to me like, hey, little cousin, like, got this opportunity for you. But he was the director of player personnel. He put together a roster based on film that he had got and, okay, this and that. And we stepped into the Arena League, and this is the highest Arena League level. Okay, not the NFL or CFL, whatever, but it's a high level. We went 14-4. We had one of the best rosters in the league. And this is just a guy who had a passion for it because he had put together rosters on Madden and stuff, and he loved that part of it and watching the film and things that go into it. But – okay, talent is talent, and he was able to get it and figure out how to make it mesh in the team. I mean, we had one of the best teams in the league that year. So I don't know, man. Peters can probably go.
And I spent way more time in roster management mode than game mode when I played Madden back in the day. Like, absolutely. And maybe it's the way certain people are wired. But you can tell how good of an eye I have for talent with the team I put together here on Locked On 49ers. Let's hear what Wink is stinking on a little bit later. We do have some Twitter questions hopefully we can get to, and some Kyle Shanahan audio. But how about the Get Upside app? You want to go get gas and save money doing it? It's super easy. If you're already getting gas, you're already driving around, you probably can end up going to the same gas station you already go to. Claim your up to 25 cents per gallon. Every time you get gas, it gets put right in your account. There's no catch with GetUpside. The cash gets put right into your account. You can cash out anytime to your bank account, PayPal, e-gift card, whatever you want. It's super easy. All you got to do is download the GetUpside app and use promo code Touchdown, and you can get an extra 25 cents per gallon every time you or for the first fill up. So that's up to 50 cents cash back on your very first tank, and then up to 25 cents per gallon on every single tank of gas you get with the Get Upside app. Some people who drive a lot are making up to, you know, $200-$300 a month in cash back, and there is no catch. So just download the free Get Upside app. Use promo code Touchdown to get that 50 cents per gallon on your very first tank. That's promo code Touchdown with the Get Upside app. BetOnline would like to wish everybody a happy betting new year as we continue our march into the playoffs. The college football season is now over. I think Kroc might have made a few dollars, although, you know what? Come to think of it, we talked about maybe Alabama as being the smart bet there. Did not turn out to be the case, but BetOnline remains the number one spot for all the best sports wagers and action in 2022. New year, new updated desktop and mobile website. Sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your very first deposit. Just use promo code LOCKEDON to get started. 49ers, Cowboys, easy money. Head on over to betonline.ag. Not only football, we got basketball, hockey, boxing, UFC, your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022 at BetOnline. The fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Yeah, the game started with Alabama, and I ended the game losing some money, man. Initially, I put $200.
What was the line?
Three and a half.
Bama was plus three.
Yeah. I didn't think either team could win by more than three the way that game was going for the most part.
9-6 at the half or something?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Bama was plus three. I said, oh, yeah, this is easy money. So I'm putting $200 on it. I watched the first drive. Really, I think it was the first two drives for Georgia. I said, it's Bennett has Stetson Bennett. He has no chance. I'm putting another $100 on him. So I live bet it. I put another $100 on Alabama. No. And didn't work out too well for me.
Stetson Bennett was struggling at the beginning of that game. He was like, oh my God, his eyes were this big. And they ended up pulling it out though, man. Tough ACL tear for a guy that might have been the first wide receiver drafted this year. Now he's sure going to end up a Jacksonville Jaguar with Trent Baalke making the selections there. There's no doubt in my mind on that one. We got to actually, Wink, let me give you the floor. What are you stinking on first before we get to Kyle Shanahan here and those Dallas Cowboys?
Right. So Kroc probably missed this because he was at the game and he didn't watch the broadcast. But normally I love Troy Aikman. Like, he is one of my favorite guys to listen to as he's calling a game. Well, there's a play is like on the Niners opening drive and Deebo Samuel's running, you know, outside tackle. He's about to go out of bounds and Jalen Ramsey like throws himself at him as hard as he can. And Deebo just takes it. You know, just stands there, and Ramsey falls down like he's a rag doll. And Troy Aikman's like, oh, that's one great hit by Ramsey. Oh, he's such a superstar. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, he just got laid out by Deebo Samuel. What? And he, like, kept harping on it, too. And it's like, no, you got it wrong, Aikman. Yeah. You're way off.
Yeah, he's way off. There's a lot of like, please don't have Aikman call the Cowboys game, and it's going to be Tony Romo. It's the Tony Romo crew calling the
another Cowboy.
Yeah, another former Cowboy, but also a former Eastern Illinois quarterback like Jimmy Garoppolo.
There you go. All right.
I saw that play, and I heard the audio from Troy Aikman, and I was a little confused. Now, I will say this. There is something to a defender running at a guy full speed and stopping all of his momentum, right? But when you just get, like, dipped on to where you, like, hit the ground all hard – and, you know, it was like Ramsey, like, slammed into the ground. Yeah. And Deebo's just looking at him. Like,
he's going to take his chain.
Like, you know. So, okay, you could say, hey, that was a good job by Ramsey throwing his body around. He stopped Deebo and made him go out of bounds. Cool. But when you start saying, yeah, he comes in and he's coming in with all – and it's like, well, he didn't affect Deebo to any extent. No. I mean, Deebo literally ran through him. It looked like Ramsey might have got a concussion as hard as he hit the ground. He pops up chirping, and Debo's like, Why? What are we doing here?
I love that play so much. I mean, it was effective. Like, he stopped. He got the tackle. Sure. The play was over.
Yeah. There was like four guys around him.
Brandon Ramsey for that. But Debo got the best of that hit. That's clear. But what the funny part was, after that hit, Debo wanted to flex. And he looked around, and I think that was at the Rams sideline too. So he looked at Ramsey, looked at the Rams sideline. He didn't want to get a taunting penalty. So he looked around, didn't know what to do. He just turned around and walked back to the huddle and just gave like a little bit of a flex on his way back. His reaction on that was hilarious. That was one of the notes that I didn't get to yesterday, by the way, Croc, was rewatching that game. I think Debo Samuel got tackled one time because there was another play where someone tried to hit him. He did the same thing. He stoned him. He didn't go down. On the touchdown was the first time he actually hit the rushing touchdown. He hit the ground because he was trying to hit the pylon, but it wasn't like he was knocked to the ground, right?
Yeah.
So that was the first time Debo Samuel touched the ground in the entire game. I think there was like one catch over the middle where he actually got tackled, and that's it.
That's wild.
Like, he got tackled on the big gain right before the touchdown to tie the game.
The catch. Yeah.
Over the middle of the field. But he was like, I mean, he made guys miss, and he's dragging the guy. They're pulling on his jersey, his shirt, and he's a special player. And for whatever reason, it's not being acknowledged how much of a special season he had. He had almost 1,900 yards.
Yeah.
As a receiver.
Most yards from scrimmage. Just behind Kupp and Jonathan Taylor. That's it. Actually, it's a perfect segue.
14 touchdowns. Like, that is a tremendous season.
15 if you count his touchdown pass, right?
Right. Boom.
So Kyle Shanahan was asked about Debo, and because they had him at the Senior Bowl that year when they drafted him in 2019. And he was asked if he saw those qualities and realized he was going to be such a versatile player that could even actually play running back in the NFL. Here was Kyle Shanahan's answer.
No, not really.
That's what it gets, because
I would like to say we did, but
it was part of trying at running back there. And we never really saw him on college. We knew going into that draft, we had to get a receiver and made the decision to not go the free agent route. And we spent our money in some other places, and we knew we had to go get a receiver. And, you know, just looking at the group that we had at the time, we thought it was so important, regardless of what type of receiver we added. We had to add a physical guy, a guy who could kind of intimidate guys, which is how he played, with his size, breaking tackles, things like that. And that's why we really liked Debo. Whatever his pluses and minuses were, we knew that he was a physical guy, and that's what we knew we added. Needed to add to our group, and to add him, he was that from the beginning, and we just found out more about him as we went. And to be able to use his physicality as a receiver has been huge, and now that we've been able to add the running back part, just makes it so much easier to get the ball in his hands.
So my mind obviously went back to the draft, and I was thinking about 2019, and I was like, okay, physical. They were looking for physical wide receivers. Jalen Hurd, also, he was the versatile guy that could have played some running back, but also looking for physicality. That was clearly what the 49ers were looking for in that draft, a wide receiver. They went back-to-back, second, third-round wide receiver. DK Metcalf, very physical. I wonder if he was on their board. I wonder if he would have been selected. I wonder if he's the next guy on their board after Debo Samuel, but he doesn't really fit the style for Kyle Shanahan. I always got the feeling that DK wasn't really their style of guy. And I wonder if they would have actually even taken Jalen Hurd if DK Metcalf was still on the board there at the top of the third round, because he only went three picks in front of Jalen Hurd. But AJ Brown is the one. I bet if Debo Samuel wasn't in the draft, AJ Brown would have been that pick for the 49ers at the top of the second round, because another physical guy there. And clearly that's what they were looking for.
Well, the way everybody made it seem, and there's two things I took away from the audio. One, the way people were talking about it, maybe this was is Mac Jones at three type thing, but it was almost a foregone conclusion that N'Keal Harry was going to be the pick. And that's what everybody was saying. And I was like, please don't. He wasn't even in my top five. I battled with my top guys with Debo, DK, and AJ Brown. I'm like, any of these three guys, I settled in on DK, number one, Debo, number two, and AJ, three. But it could have been either way there. They like N'Keal Harry, though. And I was like, gosh, clearly – he hasn't lived up to whatever, and maybe it's the Patriots. And I heard Cam Newton talk about it, the Patriot way, and how it's hard sometimes for young guys to come in and be able to fit into, like, just be able to play as well as they can in that culture. So we'll see. Sure. But the other thing I took away from that was every opportunity Kyle Shanahan gets to say, he does. I mean, there's times where it doesn't even fit in at that time, and you still use it
again. Yeah.
It's almost like a like somebody pressing the button and just adding it in there because it's so quick sometimes.
No, that's
instead of a com button, there's an button.
When I saw the lights, I went over there and then I grabbed this spoon, water bottle right here, and I'm like, golly, like how many times is this guy gonna say
He makes you want to say when you're listening to him because it like gets in your own head and then you want to start saying back. And it's funny because the 49ers might have gotten saved by the Patriots taking N'Keal Harry at the end of the first round because there was reports, and I don't know how true all this is, that maybe that he was the guy that would have been the number one on their board at the top of the second round. And luckily they did get Deebo Samuel. How about the Dallas Cowboys? I mean, this is back to childhood. Like this is where it's at. When I was growing up in the 90s, this was 49ers Cowboys. That was it. You hated the Cowboys more than the Rams, more than the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody hated the Seahawks. They were in the AFC West. Who cares? Like, I liked the Seahawks, actually. They had these, you know, funny uniforms and Steve Largent, and, like, they were bad forever. It's like, why would you hate the Seahawks, right? Maybe you hated the Raiders, but it was Cowboys 1, Raiders 2. Then maybe start talking about, like, the Falcons, Dirty Bird, and the Rams and some of those teams. But the 49ers were better than the division so much that none of the division opponents for the 49ers – growing up felt like that big of a rival because the 49ers dominated my entire life through the 90s, the division. It was the Cowboys and Packers, those playoff matchups. And Kyle Shanahan was asked about that because he grew up with the same teams. And then again, had similar stuff going on when his dad was coaching the Denver Broncos. So this was his answer asked about that rivalry of Cowboys 49ers.
Oh, I think that's as cool as it gets because that's the coolest part of my childhood growing up, I feel like. I mean, my senior year in high school, my dad was with the Broncos, and we were there able to beat the Packers in the Super Bowl, which was unbelievable. But before that, it was 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, 92, 93, 94. Every single year, I thought we were the best team in the league. I think it was 14-2. Steve Young wins the championship, and we played Dallas, who I think was 10-6 or 11-5. And I remember being on that sideline and just watching how good the Cowboys were, and it was unbelievable. And next year, going to Dallas for the home field advantage, and we all know what happened there. That one wasn't even close. And then the third year, you know, in free agency, they got Ken Norton. They added Deion week three. And then they have that game at home where Eric Davis started it off, I think, with a pick six. They had Deion fall around Alvin Harper because he had hurt the Niners in those 2 years previously. Michael Irvin went off, but they limited Alvin Harper, which was good, and Eric Davis made those plays and made a little comeback at the end. I think there was a fumble in the opening kickoff or something, but I mean, as you can tell, those games, I still remember them, and I've never watched them. Those are just – it was part of my childhood. That was such cool football because everyone knew those three NFC championships. Those 3 years were the Super Bowl.
And he was on the sideline for these games. I mean, that's what's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah. But that's how great. We all view it, and when you think of – that rivalry, we were all young during that time, but that's what we grew up watching. So I know a lot of people will say 49ers Cowboys, that's not a rivalry, but it is within because we grew up in that era. We were coming up in that era. My brother, he's a diehard Dallas Cowboy fan. We're actually going to the game together this weekend to watch it. And it's personal between he and I. It's personal just between what it was when we were growing up. I feel like every time after that, it's always – I mean, even with C.J. Beathard starting against the Cowboys, it's like, oh, just beat the Cowboys. I don't care if you do anything else this year, beat the Cowboys. When it was C.J. Beathard, like, just please beat them. When it was Nick Mullins last year, it was like, I want the 49ers to lose. I was on here talking about it, like, 49ers don't need to win. 49ers don't need to win. I was talking about that on every podcast. But you got to beat Dallas. I don't care if Nick Mullins, I don't care who it is at quarterback – beat Dallas because I can't stand them. And 49ers have another opportunity this year.
Yep, it runs deep. And I put a poll on Twitter just to ask, since the Niners had just played the Rams and had the Cowboys coming up, there's 741 votes. I asked, which rival do you hate the most? And I purposely left out other teams, just Rams or Cowboys. And it was 66%, so two-thirds Cowboys, and only one third Rams. And so that the Niners have not had important games or hardly played the Cowboys at all in like 20 years. So that's how important those games were in the 90s to a lot of 49ers fans. Still, young fans probably don't remember. They weren't even alive at that point. And Kyle Shanahan, actually, after that, there was a follow-up question, and he was asked if the players in the locker room felt the same way. And he's like, oh, they don't get it at all. Like, they weren't even alive. They weren't alive then, and they weren't Niners fans even since then, you know, until they became 49ers. You know, they grew up in other places and fans of other teams growing up. So the Niners players don't understand it. But I left out the Seahawks purposely, but Seahawks was the most common thing that people wrote in, like Seahawks. And they're like, yeah, but I left them out. So
those
Cowboys
people are probably the
Cowboys.
Younger.
25, yeah. You know, 20 to 30 years old.
And I get it.
Even at my age at 34, I'm at the, you know, I was young enough to remember that, but like at 34, I'm, you know, I'm at the kind of the end of that, like the glory days of that,
right?
That rivalry, you know. So anybody younger than me, I don't think you expect them to truly understand the hatred and how deep it runs and how those were the two teams. Like Kyle Shanahan said, that was a Super Bowl every year. The NFC Championship game
was
a Super Bowl. And if it weren't for Dallas, the 49ers would have maybe 8 Super Bowl rings right now instead of 5.
Right. If it wasn't for Emmitt Smith and Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin and all those guys, I'm in my early 40s. So I hate the Seahawks, but there's just something deep inside. There is just a hatred of the Cowboys that I don't think will ever be surpassed because, like you said, that was the foundation, you know, of my football, you know, childhood and really falling in love with the game was winning. And then a lot of losing to the Cowboys. And that was not fun.
Yeah, same here. I mean, like Wink and I are same age as Kyle Shanahan, basically. It was like junior high and then, you know, high school. And those were the biggest games and the biggest – they were the Super Bowl. The NFC Championship was the Super Bowl for a long time in the NFL. And you still feel it. And that's why it's hard for me to even give Deion Sanders as much props because then he was on the Cowboys and was like, I don't like Deion. I didn't like Deion every year of his career except for one. You know what I mean? Like I hated Deion, Cowboys Deion so much. And so like when I list 49ers, great 49ers, like he's a one and done guy. They won a Super Bowl, helped him get over the hump, which was part of that too. And then like the salary cap era is very different there too. Like these teams could stack and stack and they were powerhouse. It's a rivalry that will never end, even if the 49ers and Cowboys don't have another important game for 20 more years. So that's where we're at. That's how important those 90s games were for the youngsters who weren't around for those and don't remember them. I feel sorry for you because it was a different time. And I can only imagine what that era would look like on Twitter. Steve Young and Joe Montana, that debate on Twitter. Holy crap. You think Trey Lance and Jimmy Garoppolo is bad? That would have been 10 times worse. Are you kidding me? Two Hall of Fame quarterbacks on the same roster trying to figure out who should play for a Super Bowl team. Cowboys 49ers, Packers 49ers. That would have been wild on social media. Guys, we got to get out of here. Wink, as always, appreciate you jumping on the show.
My pleasure.
Thanks for making us your first listen, by the way, everybody out there. For your second listen, you can find me doing the Peacock and Williamson NFL show. You can find Croc doing the Locked On NFL draft. Your boy Q doing Locked On Bets, talking about everything going on in the sports betting world. All right here for free on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Croc and I back tomorrow with the hosts of Locked On Cowboys. We're doing the Thursday crossover right here. Locked On 49ers.
See you.